Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, September 17th, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind, the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're talking with product managers from Adobe about an upgrade to Photoshop Elements and the new Premiere Elements, both products from Adobe, available in a month. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can send us email by filling out a form at geekspeak.org. Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Communications Manager for Transmeta. John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com. And Miles Elam, programmer and student of American Literature. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
Before we talk with our product managers from Adobe about their new product suites, let's do some news. Miles, I'd like to start with Sean.
This is like playing the lottery or something. Did I win or did I lose?
This morning feels this way. You know, it's kind of...
You know, you skipped him 2 weeks ago, so...
Yeah,
it is
right.
Sean's turn.
It's done.
Yeah, this morning, Lyle got stuck at Cafe Bene downtown Santa Cruz. And since he doesn't have a cell phone on him, he decided to jump on AIM, which is an instant messenger, and talk to Didi in New York and have her call us to let us know that he was going to be in late.
Ah, the internet. So she made some long-distance calls for me.
My cell phone rings, hello? This is Didi. Lyle stuck in downtown. It was just crazy.
And it was kind of interesting because our internet connection here at the station, at least for us wireless Desians, was down when we first got here. So it took us a little bit to figure out what's going on.
Geeks without wireless at this point are no geeks at all.
Right. Well, we got through it. We figured it out.
Sean, the news.
So 2 weeks ago, I don't know if you recall, but when Service Pack 2 came out, we jumped online here at the station and ordered the CD, and it arrived.
Sometime within last Friday and today.
Yeah, sometime this last week. So it takes about 2 weeks to get here.
But that's the way to go, because the download on it is just annoying. And you want a CD of it anyway, because you want to be able to install it.
It's pretty nice, yeah. It's nice having a CD. And it's got everything here. Service Pack 2 with advanced security technologies.
All right, so
with that in mind, Microsoft announced a major flaw. It's a security flaw in their software's handling of JPEG graphic format, graphic JPEG graphic file format.
As in pretty much all the images online.
Yeah, very most popular internet image file format. What can happen is code can be hidden in a JPEG image. So as soon as you view the image, it could be run in the background, and you could be susceptible to a virus. Although no viruses have been written yet using a JPEG image, it appears that it could happen. So Microsoft is furiously trying to update people's machines. Not only that, it's not going to be easy to update because Windows Update is not good enough for the task. Because not only does Windows have to be updated, Office needs to be updated, so you need to use the Office Update tool. But there's another tool that will need to be used to update other software affected, including Internet Explorer, Project, Visio, Picture-It, Digital Image Pro.
Okay, what do you have to do? You have to upgrade all those?
It's what appears.
Oh, man.
So you need to go to Windows Update, and you'll be directed to the Office Update tool and the other tool to update your imaging and development applications. And on top of that...
Well, in other news... Firefox and Thunderbird have a PNG exploit, but only in previous versions. The most recent version that came out does not have the bug.
But there's no photo format safe.
A PNG.
Bear in mind, folks, this is actually from a web page. Getting a malicious image is actually uncommon because, unlike email where it can just come from anyone, you have to go to the website, and the website has some accountability. You have a website operator that would be accountable to say, like, oh, I got a bug from you.
What are Firefox and Thunderbird and the Mozilla suite doing about this PNG rendering issue?
But it's already been fixed.
Oh, it's already been fixed.
By the time the security problem was made public, they already had a version that was out. So if you downloaded the newest version, you're already set.
And, of course, Microsoft doesn't need to worry about PNG because they don't support it still.
No, they do support it. They just don't support it well.
Wait, that's not support.
John.
Hi.
Hi.
Toyota.
Makers of the Prius.
Makers of the Prius announced their... going to try to sell 300,000 hybrid vehicles by the end of 2005. One of the ways they're doing this is they're ramping up production on the current generation of Prius, which Sean has and loves. And
not that the rest of us are jealous or
anything. The rest of us with the old Priuses really want one. So they originally planned to sell 30,000 Priuses last year. Within the first 2 months, they received 45,000 orders. So they realized that wasn't going to be enough. So they upped production by about 30%. Sure, 25.8%. That's almost 30%. And they're also introducing a couple of new hybrids next year. So look for new hybrid vehicles. And in related news, Ford is finally releasing the Escape hybrid, which will get, on average, about 33 to 35 miles per gallon, which is about a 40% increase. And it's also a PZEV, which is partial zero emissions vehicle, which is the strictest standard there is for an emission vehicle out there right now. Turns out they're using... Ford had said, no, it's entirely our own hybrid package. But it turns out they do... they have licensed the software from Toyota that runs their fuel management system. So there we go. Toyota is now licensing software.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much.
Not bad. That's cool.
Sean, back to you, sir.
You know, it's interesting. The SUV is going to be hybrid.
We need a bigger car with two kids. We need a 7-seater. And so we're looking at the Toyota Highlander, which is a 7-seater hybrid. But I have this deep conflict inside me because I don't want to get an SUV because I'm, you know, opposed to all-wheel drive vehicles that don't go off-road at all.
Well, there is your driveway.
Yeah, well, that's why we have an all-wheel drive vehicle.
Sean, news.
So Sony has begun mass production of OLED screens.
What's that?
Organic LED.
Okay.
They're going to be using them in their new Sony Clay handheld devices. So this is kind of cool. The screen measures about 3.8 inches diagonally and has a resolution of 480 by 320 pixels and can project up to 262,000 colors. The viewing angle is about 180 degrees.
Oh, that's good.
And basically, OLEDs only emit light when an electrical current is applied. They have this luminescent nature, so they don't require a backlight.
Okay.
So they consume less power because of that. So it looks like this might be the next generation display for handheld devices. So look for that. Should be interesting.
Great.
Is there any drawback to it? Is it way more expensive currently?
I'm sure it's going to be more expensive.
The biggest thing is the production lines aren't really ready for it. So as more and more people start developing, the prices will drop. But they are a better technology for producing displays.
The analysts expect OLED technology to grow from a multi-million dollar to a multi-billion dollar industry in the later half of the decade.
It'll be the new LCD.
Yeah.
Miles.
America Online has rebuffed Microsoft's sender ID anti-spam technique. This is big news, as AOL is the largest ISP in the country, but also comes on the heels of the Internet Engineering Task Force also basically saying no to Microsoft's proposal, as well as multiple open source groups such as the Apache Software Foundation and the Debian Foundation.
Okay.
So basically, AOL has cited that their own sender policy framework, SPF, is incompatible with Microsoft's, and they're not willing to budge on that front. Yahoo has been fairly silent on it in that they have their set of domain keys to combat spam is compatible with both systems.
Right.
So it can be used in addition to. So
basically we're still looking at a way that has more accountability to who sends messages. That's basically
that's what they're trying to do. The open source groups are upset about it because it includes a fair amount of software patents in sender ID, which according to free software guidelines, you can't use those.
You can't use patents inside your software.
Right. Otherwise, you know, big company drops a bomb on it's free software.
So the basic idea would be to get some new system for email. And email is one of the first uses of the net. Really, email is one of the first things being used, first killer app, if you will. And the basic idea is to change the paradigm of how messages get sent so that anonymous messages can't be sent anymore. You really have to have a real person sending them. And it's a big fight. I mean, it's a big fight in as much as there's lots of ways to do it, and there are issues with who owns the technology, things of that nature. We'll keep people apprised of that, of course. Thank you, Miles. John?
On Mars today, well, over the week, Spirit and Opportunity are both going to be put into a hibernation for a while.
For the winter.
Actually, no, there's a conjunction coming up where the sun will be in between Earth and Mars, and we won't be able to contact them.
So why have them roaming around without being able to talk to them?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So for 18 days, while the sun is in between Earth and Mars, they'll be on autopilot. They're going to park Spirit and have it just do daily exercises, scientific experiments on its own. And then when the 18 days has passed, they'll resume communications, download.
See, I would just give them a break. Tell those little robots to party. They got 18 days. Have a blast.
No. You don't want them using up their batteries.
That's just true.
Doing weird dance music.
Yeah, they're kind of teenagers anyway. Thank you very much for that, Sean.
So a new invention has come from the Institute of Information Technology in Ottawa from Dmitry Gorodnichy. He invented the Nouse, which is a nose-operated mouse. So
nose and eye.
Yeah, it is nose and eye. So it uses a webcam that's plugged into the USB port, and I guess it's pointed at your head. And by moving your nose around, you can point the mouse at various places on your screen, and simply blinking your left or right eye will do a right or left mouse button click.
I want to drive my car like that.
I just want the mouse to know where I want to go.
Yeah.
I'm just worried about sneezing and suddenly my hard drive is reformatting.
It's actually pretty cool, though, if you can't use your hands.
I wonder if you could twitch your left or right nostril. I wonder if that would be like a scroll. A scroll, yeah.
That's an alt click.
So this mouse, is it in production?
No, it was just invented, and he announced it. And a lot of analysts think it's interesting technology. One of them said that people balk at doing things that require them to look silly, and there's ample room for looking silly here. So he doesn't expect it's going to do anything.
The mouse will not be used with a webcam.
But if you're paralyzed or paraplegic, this might be a technology that sounds really good to you.
Yeah,
you know?
New interfaces to computer that uses expressions and such is kind of a common field, if you will, and gestures as well. So we'll look into that. Thank you very much, Geeks.
I think in gaming that'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
You just look at who you want to kill and blink.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and John Tracy. Via phone from Adobe, we have Stefan Inoue, Senior Product Manager for Premier Elements, and Jim Moen, Mark Don, Product Manager from Photoshop Elements. Geeks, Product Managers from Adobe, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, thank you. And thanks, good to be here.
Photoshop Elements, when it's released in a month, will be an upgrade from the current Photoshop Elements 2. Mark, what's the single most important improvement?
We've expanded the app. So it used to be that Adobe really focused on giving people kind of the best photo editing, you know, kind of deriving the Photoshop technology for the normal common person. And this time out, we really went outside that workflow to the whole digital imaging workflow. So you got a digital camera, you got problems with the number of photos you have, you got questions about how to share photos, obviously you got questions on how you make your photos look good, so Elements kind of brings all those things together into one huge solution. So it's a really big release for us.
All right. Now, I have Photoshop CS, and everyone has access to the GIMP, the free photo editing package, open source package. Is there any reason why I'd want Photoshop Elements?
Yeah, well, Photoshop Elements, as I said, there's a lot of very significant new workflows that we've added to support digital camera users, and specifically, we watched and talked to a lot of people who are using digital cameras, and starting at the very beginning, when you bring a bunch of photos from, say, a vacation, you want to review your photos. Well, we have a dedicated review mode, so you can kind of sit back, watch a slideshow, see all your photos, delete the ones you don't want, save the ones you do want.
For people that aren't familiar with Elements, like myself, if you had to take, like, pick three different applications that it's kind of a merge of, would you be saying it's like part of Photoshop CS, part of Photoshop Album, and part of, like, iPhoto? Is it kind of a mix of those kind of apps?
Yeah, those are pretty good analogies. And I would also add it's also part Photo Deluxe in the sense that Photo Deluxe was a consumer low-end digital imaging application Adobe used to have 3 to 5 years ago. And it really helped people create things, so greeting cards, calendars. We also added that into Elements as well. So where Photoshop really is key to a professional workflow, someone who's doing professional web publishing or professional print production, all the tools you need are there. We don't focus so much on the pro workflow as much as the hobbyist workflow.
So an example of workflow would be like putting your images up online, that kind of thing?
So right, talking about sharing your photos, just organizing these thousands of photos now. Digital camera users are snapping shots like there's no tomorrow, and it won't be long before you have thousands of photos, and it's not long also before you realize that creating folder names to store your photos just doesn't cut it for being a really good organization scheme for photos.
Right.
That's what Elements
is. And that's why Photoshop Album comes into play. So what pieces of Photoshop Album does exist inside of Elements?
Well, we've really taken that technology and we've taken a technology pass on it to improve it in some specific ways for hobbyists specifically. So everything, if you're familiar with Album, we have all the organizational capabilities. You can bring in all your photos and see in a timeline, when you took the photos. But then you also have the flexibility of the tags, so you can attach metadata to files to make finding files later easier. We also have alternative ways of viewing your whole collection, so you can view your collection by a calendar view, you can view it by month, you can view it by just most recent photos on top. So lots of different flexibilities for viewing pictures. More flexibility in tagging. We have, as I mentioned, we have the new review mode. We also have a compare mode. So a lot of times you might take 50 shots of the family around Thanksgiving, and you're only going to get one good one because, the kid's looking here or somebody's blinking. So the compare mode really helps you go through a whole bunch of pictures to pick the very best one.
I've kind of been sold now on I take a lot of photographs. I have like 20 gigs of photos at this point, and it is a problem managing the library, of course. I'm currently using Photoshop CS's file browser and modifying keywords and metadata about the files in the XMP framework, if you will. And one thing I've noticed in Photoshop is that it takes a long time to modify keywords, add keywords, and edit them. I'm using a Mac. Is this the same kind of, what's the problem here? What's going on in the back end to actually add all that metadata into the files?
Yeah, that's a good question. For Photoshop, when you create a keyword, Photoshop will try to write that keyword into the file. And the reason for that is you want to make sure that that information is portable. In a professional workflow, things that pros want to do, they are typically sharing lots of files. And they don't want to have to share a separate metadata file along with every individual file. They want that metadata to be embedded in the file itself. And so that's what XMP does. It gives a place in every file for that metadata to be stored.
Where does that fit inside the JPEG and the TIFF standards? Is there space for that information?
Yeah, well, we can append that information. So if you look in Photoshop CS, in the file properties dialog, you'll see one section that has EXIF data.
Yeah.
Which is what cameras usually write to. And then you'll see a separate section for XMP, which is Adobe's, what we try to consider the truth about the file. Because a lot of times you'll bring a file in, modify it, and we store that modified information in XMP, but we leave the EXIF original because we don't want to necessarily destroy the original data. So that's where XMP is handy. You can take the EXIF data and transform it and store that in XMP. By contrast, Photoshop Elements can store information in the file, but by default, we store it in a database. And so we don't have to crack open every single file and write that data to the file. We can just store all that information in the database. And then when you want to export that, you can write it to the file.
All right. So you're taking away that time of opening up a 5-meg file and adding content to it.
Exactly,
you're just doing
yeah.
it kind of a database. And therefore, of course, you can index your different keywords, and it's a lot faster to find the files. But it does make them a little less portable in the sense that you can't all of a sudden now just grab 5 files from your file system, give them to somebody else, and expect all that data to be with them. So do you have like a thing where you can say, I want to write all my database file, my database information to the files right now and then go and watch a movie?
Yeah, we have a command in Photoshop Elements that writes all that database information to the file. But we can't append data to every file type. So PNGs, for example, raw files that come off of digital cameras, they don't always allow you to write data to them.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, we take a strategy of creating what's called a sidecar file.
Right.
So we store that metadata there, and the sidecar file always goes with that
Is
file.
Is that like a text file or something?
Yeah, just a little XMP file.
What about your web publishing techniques? Do you take advantage of these keywords and metadata of the file?
We do in a very simple sense, I think, compared to Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
For Photoshop Elements, we try to recycle information like caption,
mm-hmm.
Obviously the date, that kind of information, because people do spend a lot of time adding their own custom information about files. So particularly in the case of caption, when you're creating a greeting card or a calendar and you've already got a caption in there, wouldn't it be great just to click a button and have that flow into, you know, something that you've created? So
right.
we take advantage of some of the simple things like that.
All right, Mark Dom, thank you very much. Please stay with us in case we go back to Photoshop Elements. But with Premiere Elements, Stefan Inoue, hi.
Hey.
Thanks for being quiet that whole time with Mark talking. And at first glance of Premiere Elements, it looks like a brand new application based on Premiere Pro. But you've had Premiere LE for a while. Is Premiere Elements just a rename, a marketing cover for the learning edition of Premiere Pro?
No, it's actually a true Elements product in the sense that just like with Photoshop CS and Photoshop Elements targeting two different markets of professionals versus hobbyists, we've done the same thing. Premiere went through a major rewrite. It went to Premiere Pro, focusing on HD and all kinds of other professional video editing workflows.
Mm-hmm.
We really tried to target the person doing home movies, the person who has the DV camcorder shooting, you know, their kids or their favorite hobbies. And really focused on their workflow. We took out a lot of the stuff that they don't need, but really kept the essence of the product, the elements of it. So it's a true end-to-end DV to DVD workflow.
Well, does that mean that the Photoshop Elements is like a brand new product release? I mean, like you started from scratch kind of thing?
You think you'll be blown away. So Photoshop
I wish
Elements.
I was able to install it. That's the problem. I did get a beta copy of it yesterday. I know that neither of these products are actually out. I got CDs yesterday from Adobe to take a look at it and had some trouble installing on both of them.
Did you ask for a disk 2 message?
The Premiere issue was, no, I followed the instructions saying copy these to your hard drive. As I was copying them, after about an hour there at 5%, and I just had to go to sleep. So I think the problem was the either my DVD and the reader and that DVD that I got weren't compatible. These aren't issues that most people run into. This is a press issue completely. But that I'll probably get to be able to install that one again once I have enough time. So I would love to take a look at it. I do a lot of video editing. And I'm kind of curious when you talk about a hobbyist, which I'd consider myself, versus a professional. Is Premiere Pro, I mean, I know that you're not the product manager for Premiere Pro, but is it really in the same genre as the top-end video editing suites?
I think you'd be really impressed with the way Premiere Pro has been rewritten. It's fully Pentium 4 hyper-threaded, which Premiere Elements inherits.
And we're talking about 6.5, right, Adobe Premiere Pro?
No, it's actually 6.5 was the last joint Mac Windows release.
Okay.
Since then, they did a major overhaul, did Premiere Pro, and then now they've lapped it with Premiere Pro 1.5.
Okay.
And Premiere Elements is based off of the same core code.
Gotcha.
So we have advantage of all the hyper-threading.
And that's why you're Windows only on this product.
Correct, Windows
right.
XP only.
Right.
The new Grand Steel chipsets we can work with. In fact, many of our effects and transitions can actually map through your GPU, your graphics card, instead of the CPU for additional speed.
Right, I heard a little bit about that. So you can do some of your
effects. Yeah, real-time
stuff.
Editing all the time.
Right. The other thing, a Premiere, now even Premiere 6.5 had the idea of you can layer as many effects as you want, continuum, as long as your machine can handle the issues involved in layering effect on top of effect on top of effect. Does Premiere Pro, did they keep that feature?
Yes. In fact, it's even faster. So, I don't know if you've seen like the Star Wars kit or things like that where people are already using Premiere to re-edit a lot of that stuff.
Right.
But in Premiere Elements, we have up to 99 video tracks, 99 audio tracks. You can layer things. If the machine needs to render things out, it will just dither the quality on the screen, but it would always keep the real-time performance.
That's nice.
One of the nice features, if you have your DV camera hooked up and that's hooked up to a TV set, you'll actually have a mini home movie editing suite.
You'll actually,
you can actually
see
all the effects happen live on TV.
That's definitely the way to go on editing video. One of the things that I see on the kind of, I don't want to say lower end, but the hobby level home level video editing suites is that the additions of multiple tracks and separating your video track versus your audio track, lots of times those are limited. What's going on with Premiere Elements?
We really tried not to limit the user. So, a lot of the other products tried to tackle the ease of use. We've looked at that as well, but we wanted to make sure that once you got involved with the product, that you could grow with it and that you weren't limited to like two tracks like you would be in Pinnacle Studio or, you have a limited set of filters and they want you to upgrade. That Premiere Elements really is an all-in-one solution for not only the ease of use on the video capture side, but at its heart, it's a video editor, and that's really about storytelling, about making an interesting movie. And then on the share side, whether you want to create an interactive DVD or you want to go back to tape or go to the web, all the export formats are there.
What about DVD? Does it produce DVDs internally, or does you have to get another application?
No, it's all in one. So we really looked at that. iMovie, iDVD, two separate applications. People really want to stay in one environment. And whether you want just an autoplay DVD where it just plays the movie, or do you want the full-blown, menus with the buttons for the Easter eggs and the bonus movie and the slideshows and behind-the-scenes stuff, you can incorporate that very easily.
Well, I'm looking forward to taking a look at Premiere Elements to get a real feeling for it, and I'll definitely mention it again on the show after I get a good feel what my recommendations are. So stay with us, though, gentlemen, please. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, now's the time to join us. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're talking with Stefan Inouye and Mark Dom, both from Adobe, talking about the newly announced release of Photoshop Elements and Premiere Elements.
Friends of Locally Owned Water is sponsoring a free showing of Thirst, a documentary film on community resistance to corporate water takeovers, on Thursday, September 23rd at the Rio Theater in Santa Cruz. For information, call 335-5056.
This week in This American Life, like lots of people, Sarah York had a pen pal when she was little. But her pen pal was kind of special.
Dear Sarah, I appreciate your message of faith and friendship. Tell me about yourself and your city. With friendship and appreciation, General Manuel Antonio Noriega.
What it's like to have a notorious enemy of the United States as your friend, and what happens when you give him a visit this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on KUSP.
This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to a Geeksby show talking about some Adobe products that are coming out. You're welcome to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We'll take any calls from you today. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org to fill out a form to email us, and we'll respond to that on air as well as time permits. Stephen and Mark, gentlemen,
yep.
Got a quick question about, actually, Mark, this is much more for you. When you were producing, have you been in the workflow, if you will, of the creation of Photoshop Elements 3 the entire time it's been in production? Or are you, so you know the ins and outs of what's been going on with the product?
Pretty much.
Okay. Now, it is a conglomeration, as we were talking about before. I was talking about from a kind of a metaphorical perspective, not really metaphorical, but that it's kind of a mix of these different applications. And that's normally how application design works. You kind of look at good things, and you pick out what stuff you want that exists, and you also create new stuff. But I've heard that in the development phase of this product, Photoshop Album and Photo Deluxe were kind of the groups that were developing those were kind of pulled together to produce this new product. Is that in ballpark what's the reality?
Well, the history of the development team is actually pretty rich. We do have several engineers that used to work on Photo Deluxe years ago. Mm-hmm. They have been on the Photoshop Elements product from the very beginning. We've enjoyed the stability of a pretty good dev team. Mm-hmm. For the Elements editor, kind of the old version of Elements, if you will. And then the Photoshop Album history mixes a little bit of some former Photo Deluxe talent with also a company that Adobe acquired called Photiva. And so we also have kind of the fresh new perspective of a new group of engineers as well who came in and initially worked on delivering the album product and then rolled over onto Photoshop Elements to get that integration done. So we've got a lot of Photo Deluxe, a lot of this, Photiva company, as well as a lot of Photoshop experience also. So it's a nice mixture of experience and perspective.
When you're coding an application like this, and you've got, Adobe's a massive software development firm, and you have something like 10 or 15 coders working on it. How do you manage their time and make them interact with each other, especially when they come from kind of different applications or pulled together? How does that flow work? And are you involved in that?
Yeah, well, you're asking the marketing guy to comment on engineering. Happy to. Thank you very much. So one of the things that we've had to overcome is working in a geographically distributed manner, because we have a group of folks in San Diego. We got some people in Santa Rosa, some people in Minnesota, some people in Seattle. And so being able to communicate effectively just on a day-to-day basis, we've overcome mainly by having instant messaging within the corporation. So we have our, on this side of the firewall, instant messaging that we can use. So,
what instant messaging client do you use?
We're using Jabber.
Okay.
And variants thereof. Everyone seems to have their own favorite, but right. I'm pretty happy with Exodus client.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we use that on kind of a day-to-day. We obviously have to have lots of team meetings, and it's been a challenge too, because we've had so many major components of the application this time, because you have an editor, and then you've got a group of people who are focusing on something called an organizer, and then another group of people focusing on something that's a publishing engine, and so you've got lots of different engines going on there, and so each of those tend to have their own product code names, So we actually had a real product code soup for Photoshop Elements. We had to have a decryptor for people in the company to figure out now which product code is that and how does that relate to this one. And we've had, supersets of codes and subsets of codes. And so we've actually, as a main communication, a written communication tool, we've been using Tweakies internal to the company. So we've set up a number of Tweaky sites that we use to document everything that's going on with the product.
All right, we got a call from Santa Cruz. Rob, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Quick question about I just got Photoshop Elements, and I was wondering, is there an easy way to process like a whole bunch of pictures so that I could just clean them up and send them all to print all at once? Seems like I have to work on them one at a time.
Yeah. Under the File menu, we do have a command. It's called Batch Processing. In the latest version of the product, we've renamed it to Process Multiple Files. But for batch processing, you can rename files, you can resize them, you can even convert them to different formats and resample them, which is, choose a different resolution.
Rob, specifically, what kind of things do you like to do with your photos before you send them off to your print house or to your printer?
Well, what I want to do is just group them all together and then just do the basic cleanup on them. So I guess I just use the automated sort of, just fix it on all of them, and then I'd like to send them all to print at a 4x6 size.
So yeah. Is that something you can do in a batch?
In the last version of Photoshop Elements, we didn't have some of the auto fix things that Rob's talking about. So a lot of people kind of start to fall back on some of the auto enhancement features like Photoshop users are familiar with auto levels, and you have auto color and auto contrast. And one of the main reasons why we didn't put that into the batch command is because the results are not always that great. And so to batch command and auto levels on photos doesn't always produce a better photo than the one you started with. Nevertheless, there's lots of customers who have asked for that capability. So in the version 3, we've added the ability to auto-apply auto levels and auto color. And in Elements 3, we also came up with a new single command that kind of brings together all of people's favorite one-click fixes into one single command, too, which is called Auto Smart Fix. And so that's another tool.
Mark, he of course, right now, Rob doesn't have Elements 3 because Elements 3 is not out.
No, I've got Elements 2.
Is there an upgrade path for him? Have a cheaper upgrade?
Yeah, the best way to go...
We don't have to get into the details. I just want to know that.
Yeah, there is an upgrade path. You can go to Adobe.com and find out the price there.
Now, of course, Elements is not... Photoshop Elements 3 and Premiere as well, these products are not out yet.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. We just announced on the 15th.
And what's the timeline? When can Rob upgrade his Elements to 3 and get these new batch features?
Oh, you can order the product now, and we'll be shipping before the end of October. So we'll actually be shipping in about a month or so.
So Rob, for now, it looks like you got to do it to some degree manually if you want to do all the features. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to go to a non-Adobe question now. Mezzo from Watsonville, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
I called you a couple weeks ago because I got some signals that I had gotten a virus or a worm or something. Okay, so, and I was doing, I added all the Microsoft crap updates, and...
But you still think you have a virus?
Oh, no.
No.
Now what's happened is I've lost my computer's been hijacked. I mean, literally hijacked. Okay?
What's the symptom that you're speaking of?
Well, first of all, it changed my passwords to everything. So I can't go online. I can't.
Is there somebody else in your home that has access to your machine?
No. I live alone. Well, with a bunch of animals, but they don't use the computer.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, I really think you should take your machine into to a shop to help out on this.
Yeah, because, just let me tell you, my registry, I don't even know what that is, but I looked at it.
It's a database that is part of the operating system that holds settings.
Okay. All the settings have been changed.
How do you know?
I looked in the registry, and it has these dates that are like in the last week.
Oh, the registry will get changed all the time. I wouldn't worry about that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And I also now, my computer no longer has, when you look at your computer and it shows you what drive you have, I no longer have my CD-ROM or my DVD drive.
There's a hardware problem in your machine, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Again, I'd recommend going into a store. Find somebody that's going to take care of your machine as well as you take care of your animals.
Any ideas
who? You're in Watsonville. I don't know local shops in Watsonville, unfortunately.
Santa Cruz
Electronics I like a lot.
And okay. Dave's is really good, too.
Dave's Computer.
Who?
Dave's Computer.
Okay, I'll get a hold of those guys.
Thank you, Mezzo, for the call.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Good luck. It is really frustrating. The computer kind of takes off on its own.
All the folks that are listening that have computer repair shops, give us an email.
Let us know.
Yeah,
we'll plug you. We want you to help people help themselves kind of thing. So, go to geekspeak.org and just send us a note.
And with Windows XP, there are features like System Restore where you can set your computer back to a...
previous level.
Yeah, previous saved point based on dates and how big you've set that, but...
John,
something to look into.
You know, well, Sean, you had a question for our guests, correct?
Yeah, for Adobe Photoshop Premiere Element, or excuse me, Adobe Premiere Element. I'm just wondering, how does that compare to like Sony Vegas Video? I mean, what would the differences be there?
Good question. So Sony Vegas is more in line with like Premiere Pro, targeting more of the professionals. But for people that have bought Sony's Screen Blast Movie Studio, this is similar price points. Premiere Elements is $99, similar DV workflow. The Sony product doesn't have a DVD authoring engine. I believe they bundle Sonic's MyDVD, whereas in Premiere Elements, it's an all-in-one solution. Some nice features in Premiere Elements is that real-time editing with the live TV preview And it's not just during editing, but while you do titles, and most importantly, when you lay out your DVD, you can actually preview that on your TV set before you burn it out.
Okay, so what is the extent of the DVD creation? You actually can create menus?
Yeah, under the hood, these are actually our using our Encore, our professional product, to create a lot of the templates. They're just using Photoshop layered naming files,
mm-hmm.
Which almost every DVD menu that you see was done using Photoshop. But to the user, it's just a simple template of like birthdays, weddings, graduations that they can choose from. It flows the movie in automatically. So if you don't know anything about DVD authoring, you can just take your movie. It'll put a play movie, and it'll create a scene index with the jump 2 points. You can move those markers around. You can even give them custom thumbnails, like on your wedding DVD. You can jump to where the minister says, you may not kiss the bride. You don't want the thumbnail to be the minister. You want it to be the two people kissing. So you can offset that. And then if you want Easter eggs, like the special bonus or the making of, you can add those very easily.
What about like a second soundtrack?
Premiere Elements can have up to 99 soundtracks, but it does merge into a single thing. You can't have like an English versus a German. You would need to upgrade to our professional Encore DVD authoring app to do that.
So no audio commentary for your web?
You could do the movie twice, once with the commentary, once without. But if you want to do it Hollywood style, where you're using the same exact video and you just have different audio tracks that toggle, Encore would be the right product for that.
All right. Sean, you have another question, follow-up question?
Yeah, support for, like, DivX?
What's nice about DivX, they're down in San Diego, and they've already written a Premiere exporter. So if you've installed their codec so that Microsoft operating system can see the files, you can import them in Premiere Elements. And if you want to export into that format, usually you have to go to the DivX Pro, the paid version. But you can go File, Export, and then the DivX exporter will show up in Premiere Elements.
That's great.
John, we had some emails.
Yeah, we've got Lee Kelsey. Please ask your guests about how Adobe apps handle color management, especially in Windows.
No, we're not going to do that. No. Who wants to field that question?
I'll do video first because this is a simple answer. Okay. NTSC stands for Never Twice the Same Color. Color management is a disaster on TV, and it has nothing to do with Adobe. It just has to deal with the fact that everyone tweaks their TVs differently. So the color bars, we have a set of color bars, and broadcasters agree to try and sync to that, but it's a real mess. So I'll turn it over to Mark to something a little
more. So in video, it's pretty much just hit or miss.
Yeah, it depends on what the last person set the hue contrast setting to.
That's great when you're doing chroma key work.
And then on the digital imaging side, Adobe has a color engine that will incorporate a monitor profile, working space, and an output or a printer profile to kind of give you some color stability throughout the process. And Photoshop Elements utilizes that same color engine that Photoshop uses. We've simplified the options and settings, but we will allow basically the major components of the color workflow to remain intact, which is we'll ship Adobe Gamma, and with Adobe Gamma, you can create a monitor profile, or you can use a monitor profile that's shipped with your driver. You can just make sure that's installed. And then when you take images, generally with digital cameras, they usually embed a profile like sRGB or Adobe RGB. So Photoshop Elements supports both of those spaces. So when you bring your images in, we'll convert it into a working space. And then on the print side, to get the best color fidelity, make sure you're printing using your printer driver profile. Most printer driver profiles that ship with devices are pretty good. Normally, you don't need to muck around with those profiles. There are some higher-end tools that you can get to kind of give you more precise output, but for the most part, over the last couple of years, printer profiles have gotten to be pretty accurate. And so I find that with a decent setup where you've got your good monitor profile and a good printer profile, Elements do pretty good for you. But the expectation a lot of people have is that their photos actually look better when they print them out than what they look on screen, and that's really not what color reproduction, at least color accuracy, should be. You want it to look exactly the same. And so that's what...
So you want to dull your monitor down a bit.
Pardon?
So you want to dull your monitor down a bit?
Well, yeah. When you load images in Adobe RGB and other print workspaces, that happens automatically. Uh-huh. So you don't get a lot of out of gamut colors.
Right. Colors
when you're working on
handle kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, are you a Mac or Windows user personally?
I started out as a Mac user. I use Windows predominantly now, but I guess I kind of have split religion.
Is the color management for Photoshop, using Photoshop Elements or Adobe products in general, is the color management better in Mac or Windows?
A lot of people who I respect, I don't use color management enough on the Mac to actually have my own opinion, but a lot of people I respect say that the Apple color management engine makes things a lot easier. So I've heard that color management, at least for a lot of end users, a lot of people prefer Mac.
All right, we're going to go back to another question from Big Sur. Jim, welcome to GeekSpeak. Jim, hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you for being there and doing your program. I'm an amateur photographer, and I'm just digital, and I'm just realizing it's time to seriously get into improving and emailing and putting on the net my photos. My question is, I missed a clarification for the intended user level of Adobe Elements. Is that for pros, for amateurs, mixed? How user-friendly is it?
Yeah, Photoshop Elements was designed for people exactly like you. So people who are new to digital imaging, they want, in a way, kind of a soft landing into the experience. You don't want software that's going to be so dumbed down that you don't have the flexibility to
right.
be able to do the more sophisticated things you want to do. So
right.
Elements was designed to give you a lot of the Photoshop technology, but we do present it in a way that's easier to use. So the learning curve should be easier. One of the things you may want to look at, you will not regret if you get Photoshop Elements. One of the things, let me point out, for you to look for when you do get that is the how-to palette. We ship in Photoshop Elements with a palette that explains a lot of the basic tenets of digital imaging and how you use the application to do some of the basic things that you need to do. And, of course, we also have lots of how-tos that were written by Elements authors to explain some of the more sophisticated techniques. And as you use Photoshop Elements, you would actually feel over time pretty comfortable hopping in and using Photoshop if you ever needed to do that. So that's
right.
one of the nice advantages you have in using Elements is you get the advantage of all the ease of use capabilities that are built into Elements for someone who's not a professional pro. And if you at any date, you know, you win the lottery and you do buy Photoshop, you're going to feel pretty comfortable using that app too.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That sounds great. And one last question on that. I assume the way Elements works is it helps you set everything up to put it on a website.
Yeah, so we have lots of different ways that you can get your photos out. So one of them is something we call Web Photo Gallery.
Uh-huh.
And you basically select a bunch of images, and we'll put together a website for you that'll have, you know, embedded links so people could come in, click around, and browse a whole portfolio.
Great.
We let me actually stress, what we don't have is a way to push that up or FTP it up to a site. So if you already have a site, you can just wrap that up and FTP that
up. So it just makes the pages. It doesn't make the site. You have to put them up still on a website.
Right.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. Thank you very much.
All right, Jim, thanks for the call from
you,
sir. We're going to jump right into another call. Woody from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have what I hope is a quick Photoshop question. I'm using Photoshop 7, and the grid comes up automatically, and I don't know if I accidentally set something in the preferences for that, but every time I open a photo, I've got the square grid, and I need to go into, what is it, the extras and take it off.
Are you saying a grid? Is it like a checkerboard, or is it?
Yeah, the checkerboard, like the, you know, when you you can set the, like, to be 1 inch and then whatever. It's the,
oh, okay, the grid. The grid. Okay.
And it's an extra when you click extras under, I guess that's view.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to take that. Is that a default thing that always comes up, or did I set that?
Mark, can you help us out on that?
Yeah, the application is we have a number of settings that are sticky, so they'll stay that way from session to session. If you find that you're turning that off and it keeps coming back, you may have a preference file that might be going south on you.
Uh-huh.
So the best way to delete your preps file using Photoshop, and this works in Elements too, is
okay.
when you launch the app,
right
away, are you on Mac or Windows?
I'm on Windows.
Okay. So when you double-click on the app, immediately hold down Control-Alt-Shift at the same time.
Yeah. Okay.
And then you'll see a message pop that says, do you want to rebuild your preps?
Uh-huh.
And then that's just the easiest way I know of rebuilding your press file.
And does that mean all your settings have to be reset again?
Yeah, well, settings like, you know, where your palettes are and things like that.
So when I open it, I go control, or as it's opening, I go control, alt, shift, and then it will ask me to reset the preferences?
Yeah, keep those keys held down until you see the dialog.
Okay.
Is there a similar rebuild command for the Mac?
Yeah, it's command option shift.
And then is it, well, so then I, is this grid coming up every time? Is that a preference I set somehow and didn't really know it, or?
Yeah, it's in, it's that menu command that you pointed out. Yeah. I don't think, we don't have a preference for it to automatically appear. You would toggle the appearance of that preference using the menu command.
Okay.
And then that would modify the preference file for you, so that next time you use the application, it would be the setting that you left it at.
Exactly, I remember that
setting. But something's messed up with the preferences on Woody's machine, that's what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Well, great, thanks. I'll give
Woody,
that a try.
Good luck, thanks.
Thank you.
Calling. We have an email, and if you'd like to call in, we've got some room for a few more callers, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. John?
Joe Avila writes in. He's got a few questions. I think most of them we've covered. The one we haven't is, will the new Photoshop elements read RAW files?
Yeah, so that's a big deal for us, too. So for $99, we support the same digital cameras that Photoshop supports when it comes to RAW.
So you support the file format plugins of Photoshop?
Pardon?
So basically, Photoshop uses plugins to determine what file formats extended file formats it can understand. So you use the same plugins?
Well, yeah. Photoshop has a mixture. Some are file format plugins. Others are built into the app.
Right.
In the case of Photoshop RAW, you're right. It is a plugin.
Uh-huh.
I say Digital Camera RAW.
Yeah.
It is a plugin. The important thing to point out is that cameras are coming out with new RAW files all the time.
Right.
And so one of the nice things about Photoshop and Photoshop Elements is even though we ship with certain support for some digital cameras, throughout the year you can hit Adobe's site and 3-4 times a year we'll be upgrading that.
The plugin simply for those cameras?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You just download the plugin and you're good to go. And we have support. If you go to Adobe.com and go into the product area, we have a whole list of all the cameras we support.
It's a good issue, too, because the cameras really do have different features. I mean, the pro-level cameras versus the lower-level cameras, and the settings of the camera, how it produces a file, especially the RAW types, are different basically for every single camera out there. And when we talk about a RAW file format, we're really talking about a way a camera saves its RAW information. There's not like a file format that is RAW. It's kind of a general umbrella of ways cameras save their information.
Yeah, so, it is. Think of it as literally what the camera lens saw when you snapped the button without any optimization post that.
All right. John, does he have some more questions for us through that email?
Let's see. I just purchased Photoshop Upgrade. He's wondering if there's an upgrade path from Photoshop Lite to Photoshop CS.
From Photoshop Lite.
He's wondering about upgrade paths. I mean, is there an upgrade path from older versions of Photoshop to new versions? And then also, can you cross upgrade to Elements?
Yeah, so generally we don't set up upgrades from Photoshop to Elements because most people, if you've bought Photoshop, the upgrade for the most recent version of Photoshop is priced around $150,
mm-hmm.
Which is pretty close to Elements. And most people, once they're in Photoshop, they kind of like to stay in that family.
But aren't there some things in Elements that you just really don't have in Photoshop, like the album, for example?
Well, also if you're coming from a Photoshop Lite.
Yeah.
There are some features that Elements does have, but the product being at just $99, we haven't set up a separate SKU that is an upgrade from Photoshop to Elements, but we have done the opposite. If you're an Elements user and you want to upgrade to Photoshop, we have a discount set up for that. And then, of course, Adobe always has upgrades from the previous versions of that same product to more recent versions of the same product.
All right. The photo browser in Elements, is it the same as the photo browser in CS?
No, we actually have two photo browsers. We have the one that is like Photoshop, but the Photoshop file browser works on a folder-by-folder basis, so you use kind of an Explorer UI to just see the contents of each folder. The photo browser that's built into Elements, so in addition to that, we also have the entire catalog browser that'll let you see your entire collection of photos all at one level. And then you can toggle over and see a mode which shows you the folder view, but for the most part, people interact with their photos in more chronological groups than folder groups. So what, this kind of breaks out of the folder
One thing in CS, when I do like a find off of keyword or something in the browser and I see a whole bunch of images that match that match, and then I want to like copy those to a other file, to another folder or something, to burn onto a CD to send to my print shop, it takes a long time to move files when you're inside the browser, dragging them onto a folder in the Finder. I'm using a Mac on this. What's the problem there? What's going on?
I couldn't give you a specific answer.
Well, I look forward to playing with Elements and seeing if it's the same problem, and then I'll give you a ring and complain if it does.
So you're a Mac user, right?
I am both, actually.
Okay, so I'll throw a little extra tidbit out there. On the Windows side, we have archive and burn to CD built into the organizing so that you don't have to create a separate folder and then burn things separately. It's integrated.
That's good. When you're making preview images, I normally have the thumbnail size, for example, for browser, relatively large in CS. And when it first goes through the folder, it creates thumbnails that are that size for me from the original file, even for RAW, actually. And I found out recently that it's actually those files, those previews, are not saved to the file themselves. They're saved to a library in the preferences.
Right, we call them a thumbnail cache.
A thumbnail cache. Is that the same deal with Elements browser?
We do things a little bit differently with Elements. So while we do have the thumbnail cache in the file browser, we also have our own cache that we store in the organizer. And something that's a little bit different about the cache is in the Photoshop Elements organizer, we have a feature that allows you to scale the thumbnails. So imagine a little slider, kind of like iPhoto, if people are familiar with that. You can just grab a slider, slide it to the right, and we have this really smooth enlargement of the previews. And that's something that the Photoshop file browser doesn't have. You kind of pick a hard size, or you can create a custom one. On the Elements side, you have this nice smooth scaling that can go all the way to full screen.
Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Via phone from Adobe, our guest today were Stefan Inoue, Senior Product Manager from Premier Elements, and Mark Dom, Product Manager for Photoshop Elements. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
To learn more information about Adobe's products, you can go to geekspeak.org. Click on today's show. There'll be links there. The Geeks today, Miles, Sean, and John join me almost every week. And our producer, Maggie Cleveland, thank you all for making GeekSpeak happen.
Thank you, Law.
It's our pleasure.
For those of you who called in and emailed in to us to add to the mystique of GeekSpeak and the information available and questions answered, I appreciate making GeekSpeak what it is.
Please don't use that phrase anymore.
Yes, sir. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH Santa Ana, or on the web at kusp.org. Next week, we're doing an all-call-in show, so have your questions ready. Coming up next is Open Road. This is GeekSpeak. Right now, NPR News.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. death toll from Hurricane Ivan continues to rise, with remnants of the storm claiming at least 10 lives in the